You take Bob for a walk, and I'll fire up the grill.
Aren't you afraid someone will snatch me?
You aren't associated with the diner anymore, and you have Bob to protect you.
Bob was sitting in the kitchen, licking his privates. I wasn't sure how much good Bob was going to be as a guard dog.
And I'm sure Ranger tracks your every move,
Morelli said.
You've probably got GPS in your shoes, your underwear, and woven into your hair.
I hooked Bob up and walked him for almost an hour. I returned to the house, and the Morelli boys were playing billiards. I looked out the back door. Nothing cooking on the grill. I looked around the kitchen. No burgers sitting on the counter waiting to get eaten. What about dinner? I asked.
I dialed dinner, Morelli said. Someone borrowed my propane.
Are you sure someone didn't steal it? I asked.
It was me, Anthony said. I took it last week and forgot to tell him.
I filled Bob's bowl with dog kibble, got a beer out of the fridge, and Richie Schmidt walked in with our Pinot's order. Morelli and I went to school with Richie. He married Morelli's cousin Doris, and he's part of the poker night crowd. He's an electrician, but he moonlights doing Pinot's deliveries a couple times a week.
I got a chicken parm and two meatball subs, Richie said. Looks like someone got thrown out of the house again.
I'm not good at the marriage thing, Anthony said. I keep having these indiscretions.
I rolled my eyes so far back into my head I almost fell over. Anthony had a good heart, and he was a charming guy, but he would hit on anything that moved and had a vagina. I wasn't even sure if the vagina was a requirement.
Grab a beer, Anthony said to Richie. The game's gonna come on right away.
If I asked Morelli to get rid of the guys, he'd do it in a heartbeat. Truth is, I was happy to have them in his house, helping with my getaway. I ate a meatball sub and finished my beer. Richie was at the pool table queuing up, and Anthony had the game on Morelli's big flat screen. Morelli came over and wrapped an arm around me.
Do you want me to get rid of these idiots?
He asked. No, I'm glad they're here because I have to leave. I need to get back to my apartment. I miss Rex and my pillow.
Will you come back tomorrow?
No, but you can come to my house.
Can I bring my own pillow?
Morelli asked. You can bring whatever you want.
Deal.
Morelli kissed me, and I had a moment of reconsidering.
I like having you here,
Morelli said. And I like being here, but I need space. I need my life to be normal.
Cupcake, it's going to take more than a couple hours alone in your apartment for your life to be normal.
I guess there's all kinds of normal. Morelli drove me home and walked me to my door.
I could stay,
he said. What about Richie and Anthony?
They won't miss me. Richie will go home after the game and Anthony will fall asleep on the couch. I'll call him at 9:30 and tell him to give Bob a bathroom break.
Would you be staying because you think I need protection?
No, I'd be staying because I don't want to watch the game with Richie and Anthony and because I want to get naked with you. And then after I get naked, I want to...
I pulled Morelli inside before he could finish the sentence. Mr. Macko across the hall was known to crank his hearing aid up and listen at the door. He was 93. I didn't want him to go into AFib from listening to Morelli's plans for the night. Chapter 21. It was dark in my bedroom with just a sliver of light shining under my bathroom door. I was naked and tangled in the sheet. Morelli wasn't next to me, and I was cold without his body heat. I pushed my hair off my face so I could see the time. 5 o'clock. He came out of the bathroom fully dressed. He kissed me on my shoulder and covered me with the quilt.
Gotta go,
he said. It was all I could manage. Morelli got energized after sex. I relaxed into mush.
How do you do it? I asked him.
You inspire me.
Nice, I said. And I meant it. It was a really nice answer. It was also true that it didn't take much to get Morelli inspired. I waited for the sun to come up before I set my feet on the floor. I showered and got dressed and went to the kitchen. I texted Mrs. Delgado that I was home and didn't need her to look in on Rex. I made coffee and ate cereal out of the box. My apartment wasn't great, but it was home. And I was enjoying the luxury of returning to my routine. and I was enjoying the luxury of not having a babysitter following me around. I looked out my living room window down at the parking lot. A Rangeman SUV was parked beside my car. So much for independence. I gave up a sigh and told myself it could be worse. At least he wasn't sitting in my living room. I cleaned the hamster cage, made my bed with fresh linens, and gathered the laundry to take to my parents' house. There was a laundry room in the basement of my apartment building, but it was lit by a flickering neon light, and it smelled like overused gym clothes and stagnant water. If I took my laundry to my mother, there was the added advantage of having it folded and ironed. Plus, I always got a bag of leftovers to take home with me. Half a pot roast, a chunk of chocolate cake, 5-bean salad, a bowl of pasta and red sauce with sausage. The possibilities were endless and wonderful. I had the laundry basket in my hands, turned, and yelped when I bumped into a wolf. "What the?" I said.
"We need to talk," Wolf said.
"Again?"
That got a small smile from Wolf.
"This won't take long."
He glanced at my laundry basket.
"I see you have a full morning."
My windows were closed and locked, and my door was double bolted, but here was Wolf. No point in asking how he got in. There were 3 men in my life who had seemingly supernatural skills when it came to getting into my apartment. Wolf, Diesel, and Ranger weren't stopped by the locks on my door. Morelli wasn't stopped by my door locks either, but that was because he had a key.
"As you know, I've been engaged by a friend to find someone," Wolf said.
"Ryan Meyer?"
"Yes, Ryan is my friend's son. He was in this country on a student visa. He left school, overstayed his visa, and took an illegal job working at the deli. Shortly after taking the job, he disappeared."
"Leaving a shoe behind in the parking lot?"
"Correct. Everyone is busy trying to solve the kidnapping mystery, looking for the kidnapper. I don't care about the kidnapper. I want to find Ryan Meyer."
"Isn't it all the same?"
"Different focus, different process. 5 men are hidden somewhere, dead or alive. My focus is on finding those men. 3 had already been kidnapped when I came on the scene. I watched the alley and was present for the 4th kidnapping."
"Wayne Kulicki?"
"Yes."
"You could have saved him."
"I wasn't interested in saving him. I was interested in where they took him."
"And?"
"They loaded him into a van. I followed the van to the top deck of a parking garage. They offloaded Kulicki, put him into a helicopter, and that was the last I saw of him. The stolen van was left behind. The 3 men in the van left with Kulicki."
"Wow, it's like a movie."
Wolf smiled.
"Yes, I like when there's some drama involved in a crime."
"Did you recognize any of the men?"
"Victor Waggle. It was dark and they were all wearing hoodies, but there was a moment on the roof when Waggle's hood was blown off by the rotor wash."
"I'm surprised you know Victor Waggle."
"The trail goes from Ernie Sitz to Leonard Scoogie to Victor Waggle. There are others involved, but I haven't identified them. I'm telling you this because it's gone cold. Every time I had a good lead, either the police or ranger bungled in and it went away. And now you've eliminated the deli."
"I had nothing to do with that fire."
"You're a magnet for disaster. You're also inept, but lucky. And at this point, I need some luck. Hanging out in the deli waiting for someone to snatch you didn't work. You need to go proactive. I think the 5 men are still alive, but that could change if the principals panic."
"Do you have any suggestions on the proactive thing?"
"Just be your usual annoying, bumbling self. Leonard Scoogie is dead, so he's not going to be any help. There's a good possibility that Ernie Sitz is back in the country, but I haven't seen him. You should go after Waggle."
"I've tried."
"Try harder."
"What about you? What are you going to be doing?"
"I'll be watching you."
"Great. Just what I need. 1 more man watching my every move. Did you see them take Hal?" I asked Wolf.
"No, I missed that one."
"Had to be a big helicopter to take him away."
"Yes," Wolf said. "Something that could airlift a tank."
Ranger called just as I was getting ready to leave for laundry drop-off and office check-in.
"The fire marshal has cleared us to get into the deli building," Ranger said. "I'll meet you there in 30 minutes.
"Do you think it's necessary for me to walk through?"
"Yes, you're still the manager."
I made a quick detour to my parents' house. I grabbed a cheese Danish from the bakery box on the counter in my mom's kitchen, filled my travel mug with fresh coffee, and headed for the deli. Ranger was already there. The sidewalk in front of the deli was still cordoned off with crime scene tape. The debris from the fire hadn't yet been cleared away. The brick front was stained with black soot, and the windows were boarded up. The front door was open. I parked and walked over to Ranger. He was wearing black rubber boots and a rangeman ball cap. He had boots and a hat for me.
"Tell me about Wolf while you change your shoes," he said.
The rangeman guy in the car saw him?
"No, he got picked up by the camera over your door in the hall."
"What, no sound?"
"It only picks up sound in the hall."
I swapped out my shoes for the boots and put the hat on. Wolf is after his friend's kid, Ryan Meyer. He was the third manager to get kidnapped. Wolf said the trail goes from Sitz to Skugie to Victor Waggle. When the deli burned down, the trail went cold for him, so he wants me to hang myself out there and go after Waggle. He said he saw the Kulicki kidnapping. Three men in hoodies loaded Kulicki into a stolen van, drove to the top of a parking garage, loaded Kulicki into a helicopter, and took off with him.
"That sounds overly dramatic and expensive."
"It may or may not be true," I said.
"Anything else from Wolf?"
"Nope, that was it, other than mentioning that you're a bungler."
"It's nice to be acknowledged," Ranger said. "Let's go inside."
There was light from the open front and back doors, but the kitchen area was in total darkness. Ranger switched on a wide-beam flashlight and swept the beam across the area. I've investigated fire scenes before, so I knew what to expect. That didn't lessen the impact any. The destruction was frightening and depressing. The interior was charred black. Soot-stained water puddled on the floor and streaked across the stainless steel appliances. A knife survived. Number 17 on the dinner menu didn't. We'd been told to follow the crime scene tape that ran front to back and not to stray. Parts of the floor had been marked as unsafe. We walked the hall to the back door, looking in at the pantry and the walk-in fridge. We stepped out into the sunshine and sucked in fresh air. "Did any of your cameras survive the fire?" I asked.
"I have one across the alley attached to the building on the next street. The rest were destroyed."
"Did any of them catch a drone?"
"We saw one cross the lot when Hal was taken. It's probably what lured him out of camera range."
"Is there a cellar under this building?" I asked.
"No cellar, just a crawl space with a dirt floor. I've already checked it out. Nothing interesting down there."
"There doesn't seem to be anything interesting up here either."
"I didn't expect there'd be any surprises," Ranger said. "I'm hoping we get lucky on the second floor."
"Is it safe to go up there?"
"The second deck is concrete. It's a fire floor. I'm told the damage upstairs is minimal compared to the deli."
"How do we get up there?"
"It has its own side entrance. I noticed it when I took the alley to move the car last night."
I followed Ranger to the side door and waited while he ripped the crime scene tape off and worked his magic on the police-installed padlock. The stairs were narrow and smelled like wet dog and smoke. Once we were out of the stairwell, the air got better. There were two rooms and a bathroom. The front room had an apartment kitchen at one end. The rest of the room was filled with waterlogged furniture, a couple metal file cabinets, soggy rugs that had been rolled, a metal desk and desk chair, and a medium-sized safe. The second room was unfurnished but filled with empty vegetable crates, stacks of chipped plates, a garbage bag filled with soiled napkins, and other assorted treasures. "Can you get in the safe?" I asked Ranger.
"I'm not a safe expert," he said. "I'll text Slick."
"You have someone working for you named Slick?"
"He's an independent contractor. He calls himself Slick and he gets paid in cash. I don't ask questions."
We each took a file cabinet and methodically went drawer by drawer. "I'm not finding anything helpful," I said. "There's an entire drawer of appliance instructions and warranties. I don't imagine any of it covers grease fire. And there's a drawer of Ernie's income tax returns from 20 years ago." It was a four-drawer file cabinet. I began paging through the third drawer and realized I was looking at movie and television scripts. I pulled them out and stacked them on the desk. I went to the last drawer and found folders labeled Story Ideas, Pilots, Contacts, Future Projects. The folders were empty.
What do you make of this? I said to Ranger. Ranger looked through the scripts.
These look like real scripts from movies and television shows.
Why would you have a whole file drawer of other people's scripts?
If you had aspirations of writing or even producing, you might want to study scripts that already made it to the screen.
And what about the empty folders?
They're not pristine, Ranger said. I'm guessing they had material in them, and the material has been removed.
Did you find anything in your cabinet?
Papers from divorce settlements, veterinary records for two dogs, lease agreements for cars, lease agreements for commercial properties. Nothing current.
There were footsteps on the stairs, and a slim older man wearing a small black nylon backpack came into the room.
You didn't tell me to wear boots, he said to Ranger. It's a mess out there.
I'll include an allowance for shoes, Ranger said.
Nikes, the man said. $200.
Ranger nodded at the safe. Slick set his backpack on the floor and squatted in front of the safe. 10 minutes later, the safe was open, and Slick took his backpack and left. That was disappointing, I said to Ranger. No dynamite. He didn't even do any drilling. He just used an electronic gizmo. Ranger opened the door wide, and we looked in. A small spiral notepad, several bundles of $100 bills, a Smith & Wesson 38, very similar to the gun I sometimes carried. A passport. Neither of us moved for a beat. Ranger showed nothing, but I know my eyebrows were raised. I'm not sure what I expected to find, but it wasn't this. Ernie Sitz might have walked away from 20-year-old tax returns and a collection of sitcom scripts, but he wouldn't have left this much money in a building he no longer owned. That left Harry or Vinny. Vinny didn't have this kind of money. Harry had varied interests and probably had money in fake passports stashed all over the place. Ranger took the passport and paged through it.
Ernest Jingle, he said.
Is it a fake?
Yep, and not a very good one.
Ranger returned the passport to the safe, took out the notepad, and flipped pages. And, I asked,
financial transactions.
He showed me a page with numbers. Offshore banking? I asked.
Bitcoin, Ranger said.
Anything else in the notepad?
That's it.
He used his phone to take a picture of the Bitcoin numbers, and he replaced the notepad. The bundles of money were left. That's a lot of money, I said. Ranger examined one of the bundles.
It's movie money. It's a prop.
The gun looks real, I said. Ranger tossed the fake money into the safe and partially closed the door. There were footsteps on the stairs, and Morelli in a uniform walked into the room.
Looks like Crude is still sick, Ranger said.
Pneumonia,
Morelli said.
I think he's faking it, so I have to take over as primary on this.
There's a lot of faking going on, Ranger said. The safe is full of fake things.
Morelli glanced over.
I saw Slick on the street. I appreciate that you left this open for me. I wouldn't have cause to break in, and even if I did, Slick isn't in my budget.
Ranger and I left, and Morelli stayed.
I have to get back to Rangeman, Ranger said.
I put my shoes on and gave him my boots. I'm going to the bonds office. I have some loose ends.
Victor Waggle?
For starters.
Did you tell Morelli about your conversation with Wolf?
Ranger asked. No, I thought it would just muddy the water. He'd have yet another useless lock put on my door, and he's already got everyone looking for Waggle.
Babe,
Ranger said, giving my ponytail a playful tug. I drove away from the deli with my rangeman escort close behind. Don't look, I told myself. Pretend he isn't there. Ignore him. I parked in front of the bonds office, and he parked behind me. I got out of my car, and he beeped and waved. I gave him a little wave back.
Who's on your bumper today?
Lula asked when I walked in. I don't know. They all look the same. They're completely interchangeable.
You sound like Miss Cranky, Lula said.
The escort thing is getting old. My phone rang, and I looked at the screen. Holy cow, it was Annie Gerke's number. Hello? I said, this is Stephanie.
This is Annie Gerke, she said. I'm thinking that I might want to check in with the judge about my misunderstanding.
That's great. I can help with that.
I have a small problem that I have to take care of first. It's my cat, Miss Muffy. I want her back.
Okay.
and you need to get her for me.
Not okay.
I have it all figured out, Annie said. My scumbag philandering ex-husband and his whore, who happens to be my ex-sister, are in Atlantic City for a cornhole tournament. They won't be back until tomorrow, so I thought this would be the perfect time for you to get Miss Muffy.
Why can't you get Miss Muffy?
I tried. I can't get into their house. It's all locked up. I could see Miss Muffy through the window meowing at me. Poor thing.
I understand that you love Miss Muffy, I said, but I can't break into someone's house to steal their cat.
She's not their cat. She's my cat.
It's considered breaking and entering and robbery, I said.
They catnapped Miss Muffy. They took her when I wasn't home.
Don't you lock your house?
The scumbag had a key.
How about if I come pick you up and take you to the courthouse to get rescheduled? Then we can find a way to get Miss Muffy back.
No. First I get Miss Muffy, and then I'll go with you. I've done some research. All you have to do is go to the door and holler that you're a bounty hunter and you're sure a felon is hiding out in the house. Then you can legally break the door down and get my cat.
Technically, that was sort of true. I'm not that kind of bounty hunter, I said. I don't break doors down.
These are desperate times, Annie said. You have my phone number, and I'm going to text you the address. It's easy to recognize Miss Muffy because she's fluffy, and she's a cat. There should be a cat carrier by the back door. I could see it through the window. Just put Miss Muffy in the carrier. She's very sweet.
I hung up, and my phone dinged with the texted address.
What was that about? Lula asked.
Annie Gerke wants me to steal her cat back for her.
That's a worthy cause, Lula said. That's righteous.
It's a felony.
Not for us, Lula said. We go in looking for Annie, and we can't help if the cat follows us out.
Connie had her hands over her ears. I'm not hearing any of this. Half Connie's family is mob. She grew up knowing when not to listen.
It's my understanding from last time we talked to Annie that her husband has the cat, Lula said. Does this intervention involve getting the husband out of the house?
The house is empty, I said. The husband is at a cornhole competition in Atlantic City.
Say what?
Cornhole competition. That's what Annie told me.
That sounds like something sick, Lula said. What kind of person would participate in a cornhole competition? I personally wouldn't be involved in anything to do with cornholes. Even when I was working as a hoe, I didn't touch cornholes.
It's a game with beanbags, Connie said. There's a board with a hole in it, and you throw the beanbags and try to get them through the hole.
Then why is it called a cornhole competition? Lula asked. Why isn't it a beanbag competition?
I don't know, Connie said. I got nothing.
So where does this guy live?
Lula asked. Hamilton Township?
We should go take a look,
Lula said, settling her faux Vuitton tote onto her shoulder.
Scope it out. It could coincide with lunch at the new diner on Route 33. I understand they serve an excellent Taylor's pork roll sandwich.
We took Lula's Firebird and followed her GPS to Freestone Street. It was a neighborhood of nicely maintained single-family houses. Lots were just the right size to have a swing set in the back for the kids and a fenced yard for the dog. Sidewalks were shaded by mature trees. No graffiti. No bullet holes in the aluminum siding. Very respectable. Didn't seem appropriate for the scumbag cat snatcher and his whore.
This is a real nice neighborhood, Lula said. I bet they got stainless appliances in these kitchens.
We're looking for number 3625 Freestone, I said. It's the ranch, just ahead on the right. Lula idled in front of the house.
Not a lot of bushes around it, she said, and the neighbors' houses are close on both sides. People are going to see us creeping around looking to break in.
We want to go in through the back door, I said. That's where the cat carrier is located.
I'm thinking we do this at night, Lula said. It's harder to see me at night on account of I'm like a shadow then. I'm like super dark shadow girl.
I was like super white moonbeam, but I could tamp it down if I wore a black hoodie. Lula cruised on down the street, and the rangeman guy followed close behind. We stopped at the diner and invited the rangeman guy to join us for lunch, but he declined.
He looks like he eats granola bars made out of tree bark and beetles, Lula said, and I bet he goes commando.
The commando remark required a moment of silence from both of us while we enjoyed the mental image. At the end of the moment, we gave up a sigh and ordered Taylor's pork roll sandwiches with cheese and a side of fries.
Now that I've been a part of the food industry, I'm seeing a lot of things differently, Lula said. These forks and knives we got don't even have food stuck to them. That's a sign of a superior establishment. And the plates that are coming out are all attractive with pickles as a garnish. It's nice to have something green on the plate besides a sliced turkey.
I nodded in agreement. The grease fire was an act of God. It would only have been a matter of time before we poisoned someone if the deli had stayed open. Wolf dropped in this morning, I said. He thinks I should be concentrating more on finding the kidnapped victims than on trying to find the kidnapper.
I agree with that, but I don't know how you do it. It's not like anyone left a forward an address.
He thinks I should try harder to capture Waggle.
You'll have your chance tomorrow night, Lula said. He'll be at the snake pit.
He'd be crazy to perform.
What's your point?
Lula asked. Lula was right. Victor Waggle was a crazy man. I'm taking Ranger with me this time, I said.
Don't think you're leaving me out. I got body armor and a new wig, so when my hair gets shot, it's not mine.
Our food arrived, and I ate on autopilot while I thought about my conversation with Wolf. He said the connection went from Sitz to Skoogie to Waggle. The kidnappings had been caught on video and put on YouTube. The safe and the file cabinets had been filled with television and movie stuff. It was like this whole bizarre horror was entertainment, like reality television or dinner theater or a personal diversion. I called Ranger. I'd like to go back to Skoogie's office, I said. Can you get me in?
When you're done with lunch, have Carl bring you around to the garage entrance. I'll meet you there.
Carl is the guy who's been following me around?
Yes.
Ranger disconnected, and I dug into my rice pudding.
Why are you going back to Skoogie's office? Lula asked.
I went through the deli building this morning with Ranger, and there were some files missing from a file cabinet. I want to see if they're in Skoogie's office. Chapter 22. Lula went back to the office, and Carl took me to the Hamilton building, where I transferred from the Rangeman SUV to Ranger's Porsche 911 Turbo.
Let me guess, Ranger said. You want to look for the missing files.
I narrowed my eyes at him. Am I wired? You heard me talking to Lula, right?
Wrong. I had the same thought. There's a theatrical connection between Sitz, Skoogie, and Waggle, and possibly a criminal one. I wouldn't mind seeing what's in the missing files.
For instance, maybe under future projects would be a plan for kidnapping five men and leaving a shoe behind.
It's an interesting hook, Ranger said.
We parked and took the stairs to the second floor. Ranger opened the door to Skoogie's office, startling Miriam. She was at her desk, looking lost. I wasn't sure you'd be here, I said to Miriam.
It turns out the business doesn't stop with death. There are contracts in place and new deals in progress and checks to write. It's all very confusing because I don't seem to be working for anyone. I thought about leaving a message on the answering machine that Mr. Skoogie is dead and the agency is closed, but it felt irresponsible.
Did Mr. Skoogie have business partners? I asked.
He had joint ventures, Miriam said. It's common practice for multiple production companies to participate in a project. As far as I know, the agency was solely owned by Mr. Skoogie. I suppose someone will inherit it, but I can't imagine it continuing without Mr. Skoogie.
We're going to look around, I said. We won't be long.
Take your time. It's nice to have the company. It's creepy being alone in here now.
I took the desk, Ranger took the file cabinet, and we both came up empty. Nothing, I said. No missing files. Did the police take anything out of the office? I asked Miriam.
No, she said. Not to my knowledge.
I've reviewed the security tape again, Ranger said. Skoogie entered the building with a messenger bag hung from his shoulder. I don't see a messenger bag here. I also don't see a computer on Skoogie's desk.
He worked on a laptop, Miriam said, a MacBook Air. He carried it in his messenger bag. It was so he could work from home or on the road.
Did you back it up for him? Ranger asked. I didn't see an external backup drive.
He was very private about those things, Miriam said. He might have used the cloud.
Was he on the road a lot? I asked.
When I first started working for him, he would occasionally travel with a band. For the past year, he's been going to L.A. trying to sell a television show.
Do you know anything about the show?
Not really. I've never been involved in the creative side of the business. My title is Assistant to Mr. Skoogie, but I'm mostly just a receptionist and I do a little bookkeeping. I know Victor was involved, and a Canadian company was interested in producing. I believe Mr. Skoogie was trying to find a second production company with deeper pockets, and on this last trip, he scheduled a meeting with a woman from HBO. Mr. Skoogie was very excited about that. I don't know how it turned out.
What about Ernie Sitz? I asked. Was he involved?
He was very involved in the beginning, Miriam said, but he developed some legal problems and he disappeared. I heard a rumor that he was in South America.
We left Miriam and returned to Ranger's Porsche. Now what? I said.
Now we visit Skoogie's condo.
Are we still looking for the missing files?
Missing files, missing computer, missing phone.
Maybe they're all in the missing messenger bag, I said. And that probably was taken by whoever came up the back stairs and visited Skoogie before Waggle found him. Leonard Skoogie lived in a budget-friendly five-story condo building north of the government complex. We took the elevator to the fourth floor, and as we walked down the hall, I wondered if any of his neighbors even knew of his passing. The building felt impersonal. Ranger knocked twice and announced himself. No answer. He picked the lock and opened the door. I looked around and thought this is the way a marginally successful man lives after paying off three ex-wives. Small dated kitchen, combined living and dining room, one bedroom and one bathroom. The furniture was inexpensive and utilitarian. The exception to this was a large, elaborately carved mahogany desk that occupied the area designed for a dining table. I suspected this was the one piece of furniture he'd kept from the divorce settlements. We searched the condo and came to the desk last. The top was a mess of loose papers, sticky pad notes, takeout menus, and candy bar wrappers. There was a charger and cleared space for a computer. The loose papers and notes weren't helpful. A reminder of a haircut, a band contract, a party invitation. Drawers contained the usual assortment of paperclips, pens, antacids, rubber bands. The file drawer was devoted to pornography. I suppose the pornography was less expensive than acquiring a fourth wife.
I don't see an external backup, but he has six flash drives, Ranger said, pocketing the drives. Let's hope we get lucky.
We left the condo and drove back to Rangeman. Ranger plugged the drives into his computer, and the third one contained several short videos. There was an interior of the diner with Raymond, Stretch, and Dahlia at work. The camera panned to a third man. I knew from photos that this was the first kidnapped manager. The video that followed was of the manager taking the garbage out. This was one of the YouTube videos. The next video is dark with a spotlight on the manager's face. He has a number tattooed on his forehead. He's unresponsive. The next video is Waggle with a meat cleaver in his hand. He's making chopping motions and he looks completely insane. The last video is back at the diner, and Dahlia is serving a customer. The camera pans in, and we see what appears to be a penis in a hot dog bun. Ranger pulled the flash drive out of the computer.
This answers some of our questions, Ranger said.
It took several beats for me to find my voice.
Do you think it's real? I whispered.
Probably not, Ranger grinned. The size is optimistic.
The size is frightening, I said. The whole series of videos is frightening. Ranger ran through the remaining flash drives. Two were empty, and one contained two short videos of Waggle taking the money and the passport out of the safe. When I first saw the videos of the five men being kidnapped, I thought they were the product of a freak who wanted to brag about his crime. Now I was thinking the snippets I saw today might be made by a freak who wanted to show he was a videographer. People working in a diner. People mysteriously disappearing from the diner. Crazy meat cleaver guy chopping. People's parts returning to the diner. The crazy meat cleaver guy withdrawing his money and passport and presumably getting out of town. Not necessarily a movie I'd want to see. I was more a rom-com, sitcom, and cartoon kind of person. Ranger put the six drives in his top drawer, pushed his chair back, and stood. Are you going to share the drives with the police? I asked.
I'm going to return them to Scoogie's desk later tonight. The police are on their own to find them. Would you like to ride along?
I can't. Lula and I have a job to do.
Does it involve waiting tables and making sandwiches?
No. I'm helping someone with pet transport.
We were in Ranger's fifth floor office with the door closed. The office was small and private, and Ranger was very close. He leaned into me. I took one step back, and I was against the wall.
I could work around the pet transport, he said.
I meant to say no, but it sounded more like when it came out of my mouth. Ranger kissed me, and it was electric. Zing! The heat went from my lips to my toes and hit all the good spots in between. His hands slowly slid over my body, finding their way under my knit shirt.
We should move this upstairs, he said.
I said.
Here's
the thing.
I hate when you start an explanation like that, Ranger said. It's never good news.
Kissing is cheating a little. I can deal with it. If we go upstairs, it's going to be cheating big time.
Someday when we have more time, we need to discuss your moral compass and its reluctance to always point north.
My moral compass is fine until you tamper with it.
Babe, Ranger said.
Carl drove me back to the bonds office. I retrieved my car and drove to my apartment building with Carl on my back bumper. I wanted to tell him that it wasn't necessary for him to sit in my lot and wait for God knows what to happen, but I knew that was pointless. Carl took his orders from Ranger. I had a bowl of cereal for dinner, and I texted Annie Gerke. I told her the pickup was set for tonight, and I would call her when it was completed. She texted back that she was very appreciative and would be waiting to hear. It was followed by a bunch of emojis, hearts, happy faces blowing kisses, happy cat faces, hands clapping. Don't worry, I said to Rex. This will be a piece of cake, and then I'll come home and we'll have a nice, quiet evening together. Rex was burrowed in his soup can house, but I'm pretty sure he was listening. Chapter 23 Lula knocked on my door at 9 o'clock.
I'm all ready to go, she said. I got on my night stalker clothes. I'm even wearing sneakers.
She was wearing a black satin hoodie with Hot Mama embroidered in pink on the back, a black sequined bustier, black tights stretched to the breaking point, and sneakers covered with silver glitter. I was wearing a black Nike sweatshirt, a black t-shirt, jeans, and red sneakers.
There's a Rangeman SUV sitting in the parking lot next to your car, Lula said. I'm thinking as long as we can't get rid of him, we might as well use him as our wheelman. Be easier for us to make our getaway with him waiting for us.
Lula had a point. I didn't expect problems, but it might be a smoother operation with a dedicated driver. We trooped down to the lot, and I looked in at the Rangeman guy. You're not Carl, I said.
Carl went off duty. I'm Eugene. I'll be with you for the rest of the night.
I have to pick up a cat for someone, I said. Would you mind driving us? It would make things easier.
Of course, Eugene said.
Lula and I settled ourselves into the SUV, and I gave Eugene the address. I hope we're doing the right thing, I said to Lula.
Of course we're doing the right thing, Lula said. We're reuniting our mama and her kitty. We're bringing poor Miss Muffy home where she belongs.
Let's review the plan, I said. We quietly go to the back door. We get the door open, find the kitty, and put her in the carrier that's left by the door. Then we calmly return to Eugene and drive off.
Yep, that's the plan, Lula said. I got my door unlocking tools with me, too, so we won't have to kick it in.
Eugene cruised down Freestone Street. It was strictly residential, and the street was traffic-free at this time of night. Lights were on in most houses. Everything was quiet. The scumbag's house was dark. Eugene parked in front and cut his lights. Lula and I got out and quickly walked around the house to the back door. Do you think you can get this open? I asked Lula.
No problem, Lula said. Easy peasy.
She took a flathead screwdriver out of her purse and stuck it into the lock.
All you gotta do is point this down a little and turn it.
She jiggled it around, but it wouldn't turn.
Huh, Lula said. It looked easy on YouTube.
She tried a paper clip and a nail file next. Still nothing.
This is real annoying,
Lula said. She took a hammer out of her purse, whacked the doorknob, and it popped off.
Crap. You broke their doorknob. That's what you gotta do when there's a tricky lock,
Lula said. The door swung open, and we stepped inside.
What's that beeping? Lula asked. Do you hear it?
I froze in place. It's an alarm system. We activated their alarm.
I don't remember Annie saying anything about an alarm.
The beeping stopped, and a split second later, the alarm siren started wailing.
Yow, Lula said, holding her ears. That's freaking loud.
A fat cat streaked into the kitchen and hunkered down under the small table. I grabbed it and looked around for the carrier. No carrier.
Screw the carrier, Lula said. There's going to be police here any minute.
The cat was hissing and squirming, trying to bite and claw me, trying to get away. I held it at arm's length and ran out the door.
Get the doorknob, I said to Lula. Stick it back in and try to close the door. Maybe no one will notice.
I ran around the house with the cat. I could hear Lula huffing and puffing behind me.
Start the car, Lula yelled at Eugene. Start the car!
We jumped into the car, and Eugene sped away. The cat's tail was totally bristled out, its eyes were slitty, and it was growling.
I thought Annie said this was a nice cat, Lula said, squeezing herself against the door, getting as far away from the cat as possible. This is a cat from hell, and I feel an allergic reaction coming on.
It's just had a traumatic experience, I said. We should talk to it in soothing tones. Nice kitty, I crooned at the beast.
Where are we going?
Eugene asked. Pull into a parking lot somewhere so we can make a phone call and reorganize. Eugene found a 7-Eleven a couple blocks from the scumbag's house and parked off to one side. The cat had quieted down enough for me to loosen my grip and punch Annie's number into my phone.
We have her, I said to Annie. We have Miss Muffy. Where are you?
How do I know you really have her? Annie said. I want to see a picture. Maybe you could FaceTime her.
I hit the FaceTime button and pointed the phone camera at the cat.
That's not Miss Muffy, Annie said. What? Miss Muffy is a fat, fluffy white cat with a pink collar. You have the wrong cat. You have a fluffy orange cat.
Maybe it turned orange while it was away, Lula said. Maybe someone took it to Letitia for beautification.
Is it possible that the scumbag has two cats? I said to Annie.
I suppose, but I didn't see a second cat when I was snooping around. I just saw Muffy and her carrier.
I couldn't find the carrier, I said. It wasn't by the door. There was a moment of silence.
Are you sure you were in the right house? Annie said. 3635 Freestone?
You told me 3625 Freestone. You texted it to me.
My finger must have hit the wrong key, Annie said. I've had a lot of stress in my life lately. Sometimes my hand shakes.
Maybe it's from all that orange juice, Lula said. Maybe you should get your liver enzymes checked.
And now, as if I don't have enough stress, I still don't have my Miss Muffy, Annie said.
You can have this cat, I said. It's a really nice cat. Only a couple of the scratches on my arm were still bleeding.
No, I want Miss Muffy.
I'll get back to you, I told Annie.
I'm not liking the way that conversation went, Lula said.
We have to return this cat.
No way,
Lula said. Eugene was watching me in the rearview mirror. I think he was smiling.
Are we going back to Freestone?
He asked. I blew out a sigh. Yes. A solitary police car was parked in front of 3625. The interior light was on in the car, and the cop looked like he was writing a report. The light went off, and the car drove away. I got out of the Rangeman SUV with the cat and walked to the back of 3625. I opened the back door and set the cat down in the kitchen. It hissed and tried to slash me one last time, but I jumped away. I closed the door as best I could and returned to the SUV.
How'd that go?
Lula asked. Great, I said. The cat thanked me and said it was sorry it scratched me.
We still gonna try to get Miss Muffy?
Yes. Eugene drove to the next block and parked in front of 3635.
Do you need help?
He asked me. Are you any good at opening doors?
Yes, ma'am,
he said. Then I need help. We all walked around to the back of the house and tried the back door. Locked. Eugene took a slim tool from a pocket on his cargo pants and unlocked the door. Everyone held their breath when I opened it. No beeping, no wailing sirens. I looked down and found the cat carrier exactly where it was supposed to be. "Now all we need is a fluffy white cat," I said. Eugene took a penlight out of another cargo pants pocket and flashed it around the room. A white cat trotted into the kitchen and meowed at us. I scooped the cat up and zipped it into the carrier.
"Just like I told you," Lula said. "Easy peasy."
I FaceTimed Annie from the back seat of the SUV.
"It's Miss Muffy," Annie said. "You did it. You got Miss Muffy. I'm staying with a friend on Apple Street just off Hamilton Avenue. I'll be waiting on the front porch for you."
We delivered Miss Muffy to Annie, and she promised to check in with the court first thing in the morning. I told her I would pick her up at 10 o'clock. I thought chances were about 50-50 that she would be there when I arrived. Once again, the key to true happiness is lowered expectations. Ranger called just as we were approaching my building's parking lot.
"Babe," he said, "you're not going to make the cut as a cat wrangler."
"The second attempt went okay."
"I have part of the first one on video from Eugene's dash cam. I'm going to save it for those days when I need something to smile about."
"Always happy to make you smile."
"Wolf is in your apartment," Ranger said. "Would you like Eugene to remove him?"
"No, he's harmless."
"He's not harmless. I'm not even sure he's human. He shows up as a blur on my video feed. He's rogue even by my standards."
"He might know something that we don't."
"Have Eugene wait in the hall and leave your door open."
"Okie dokie," I said, but the line was already dead.
I told Lula I'd meet up with her in the office in the morning, and Eugene and I trooped upstairs. Wolf was waiting for me in my living room, standing by the window. "We have to talk," I said to Wolf. He smiled.
"I'm listening."
"I hate when you break in like this. Stop it."
"I'll take it under consideration," Wolf said. "Is there anything else?"
"No, that's it."
"Nothing to share?"
"Nope."
"You've been busy," Wolf said, "spinning your wheels in Scoogie's office. I could have told you it was clean."
"And the house?" I said. Wolf shrugged. Now it was my turn to smile. "You never searched his house," I said.
"That was an error on my part. Still, I trust you didn't find anything significant."
"Not significant."
"Mildly important?" he asked.
"Nothing worth mentioning," I said.
"Are you playing with me?"
"Not intentionally."
He had crossed the room, and he was standing very close to me.
"I could suggest a game," he said.
"I bet. No, thank you. Maybe some other time."
He touched the back of my hand with his fingertip, and I felt a burning sensation. I looked down and saw that a blister was forming where he'd touched.
"How did you do that?" I asked.
"Magic," he said. "Would you like to see what else I can do?"
"Eugene!" I yelled.
Eugene walked in from the hall, and Wolf gave his head a small shake.
"Disappointing," he said. "I expected foolish self-reliance from you."
"Are you going to disappear in a puff of smoke?" I asked him.
"No," he said. "We've had enough theatrics for one night."
Wolf left, and Eugene turned to me.
"Would you like me to stay in the hall?"
"Not necessary," I said. "The rangeman control room monitors my hall. They'll let you know if Wolf returns."
I said goodnight to Eugene, and I locked my door. I had a brief conversation with Rex about the state of my life. I put some first aid cream on my burn. I made a short phone call to Morelli. And I took my MacBook Air to bed with me and watched 2 episodes of House Hunters International before falling asleep. Chapter 24. My first thought when I woke up was that it was Thursday and I was going to have to go back to the snake pit. Maybe I'd get lucky, I told myself, and there'd be a cataclysmic ending of the world before Rock and Armpits took the stage. I was kidding, of course, because a cataclysmic ending of the world would be bad. On the positive side of the morning, Wolf wasn't in my kitchen brewing coffee and scrambling eggs. An hour later, I rolled into the office, Lula had already snarfed up the best donut, and Connie was paging through a Costco flyer.
How did it go yesterday? Connie asked. Did you turn up anything new with Ranger?
We went to Scoogie's house and found some short videos. If you put them all together, they sort of told a story. It started with a normal day at the deli with Stretch and Raymond, and it moved on to the kidnappings, the forehead tattoo, Victor Waggle with a meat cleaver, and then it returned to the deli with someone getting served what looked like a penis in a hot dog bun.
A penis in a hot dog bun, Lula said. That's sick. Did it fill the whole bun?
Yes.
That's a good-sized penis. What about condiments?
There weren't any.
Huh, Lula said. Everybody knows it's all about the condiments. Who wants to eat a naked penis? If I'd been on the sandwich station, that penis would have had mustard and relish on it at the very least. Or it could have been a chili dog penis. Mustard and chili and chopped onion. That's the way to serve a penis.
Connie and I exchanged glances. We didn't know where to go with this. It's a penis, I finally said.
All the same, Lula said. I'm just saying.
What's on the schedule for today? Connie asked.
I'm picking Annie Gerke up at 10 o'clock. I'll let you know when I have her in custody and you can meet us at the courthouse. I have to get my laundry from my mother, and Lula and I should check on chicken farmer Darren Boot.
And tonight we get to go after Victor Waggle, Lula said. We can scope things out ahead of time when we look in on Boot.
Do we have a full profile on Leonard Scoogie? I asked Connie. We know about his office and his condo. Does he own any other property? Connie ran him through her system and shook her head.
His wives have picked him clean.
What about Ernie Sitz? Does he have any hidden real estate?
He has a house in the burg. His wife is in it. She's filed for divorce. He has a couple properties in Columbia. Everyone assumes he's hanging out there now. He had a warehouse in an industrial park in Cherry Hill. It was foreclosed and sold at auction a year ago. That's all of it.
I knew about the house and Columbian holdings. That information had been in my original file.
Just a thought, I said. The five kidnapped victims are being held somewhere. It will be nice to discover property owned by Sitz or Scoogie that was previously overlooked.
I can dig around, Connie said. Lula looked out the front window.
Who's following us around today?
Carl, I said. He's working the day shift.
Doesn't seem like there's much danger lurking out there anymore, Lula said. Not that I'm opposed to a good-looking man riding on my bumper, but an armed guard doesn't seem so necessary.
I glanced at the burn on my hand and thought about Waggle and the meat cleaver, and an armed guard seemed like an okay idea to me. It's almost 10 o'clock, I said. Let's see if Annie Gerke is ready to get rebonded.
Do you want to drive or do you want me driving?
Lula asked. Carl is driving, I said. We're going to use the rangeman car. Annie was waiting on her friend's porch. She was wearing a pale blue dress with a matching cardigan sweater. Her short hair was nicely styled, and she had a touch of pink lipstick. She was carrying a small purse, and she was holding a round tin. She got into the back seat, and she gave me the tin.
My friend Dolly and I baked you some cookies this morning. It was so nice of you to get Miss Muffy for me. She slept on the pillow next to me last night. It was wonderful.
I called Connie and told her we were on our way. We're going to check you in at the police station and walk you over to the courthouse, I said. Connie will meet you there and get you rebonded. After she bonds you out, she'll take you back to Dolly's house.
That's perfect, Annie said. I'm in a much better place now. I have my Miss Muffy. I've changed the locks on my house, and Dolly said she would adopt Miss Muffy if I have to go away to prison for a long time.
I'm sure that's not going to be necessary, I said. An hour later, Lula and I were back in the rangeman SUV.
That was real nice of her to make us cookies, Lula said, taking a cookie out of the tin. Chocolate chip, my favorite.
I gave Darren Boot's address to Carl and told him to do a slow cruise past the snake pit.
Hold on here, Lula said. I know this taste. I've had this cookie before. It's got an edible in it. These are hashy smashies. They're a controlled substance tasty treat. This cookie could put you in a real good mood, but if you eat too many of them, you want to stay close to a bathroom.
I took the cookie tin from Lula and put it in the cargo area behind the rear seat.
I'm not one to judge, Lula said, but seems to me Annie Gerke's coping methods bear some examination. She should take up yoga or learn to play the saxophone.
There was no sign of life on the snake pit block. It was eerily quiet. The landscape was depressing. The area beyond it was even worse. We approached the junkyard, and it was like a ray of sunshine. The big electromagnet was working, moving cars to the smashing machine.
I wouldn't mind working here, Lula said. I like smashing things.
A half mile later, we turned into Darren Boot's driveway. His pickup truck is parked in front of the house, I said to Lula. That's a good sign. A chicken flew out of the tall grass, flapping and squawking. It crashed into the rangeman windshield and lay on the hood, momentarily stunned. It got up, pooped, and flapped away.
That's it for me, Lula said. There's no way I'm getting out of this vehicle. Call Boot on the phone and tell him we're parked and waiting for him.
I dialed Boot's number. He's not picking up, I said. I'm going in.
You could take Carl with you, Lula said.
Taking Carl with me had some appeal. Leaving Lula alone in the car had no appeal. In the past, Lula has sometimes decided she needed nachos and forgot she was supposed to wait for me. Carl can stay here, I said. Darren won't be a problem. I kept my eyes on the path and made it to the house without getting pecked. Minnie Mouse answered and invited me in.
Darren is out back, she said. He's working on the food truck.
I didn't know you had a food truck.
Goodness, yes. It uses up the excess eggs and it brings in a nice amount of money. Just go through the kitchen and out the back door.
Darren was a slim man with thinning brown hair and a large Captain Hook nose. He was hosing down a food truck that looked like a refugee from the junkyard.
Howdy, he said. I'll be with you in a minute. I just got to get this washed off. The chickens make a terrible mess of it.
What do you sell? I asked him.
Breakfast burritos, mostly. We don't sell them for breakfast, but they're called that on account of we fill them with scrambled eggs. When you got a night of hard drugs and drinking, there's nothing better than a breakfast burrito. People stand in line forever for our burritos.
It suddenly clicked in my head. I saw this truck at the snake pit, I said.
Yep, that's where we sell them, every Thursday and Friday night. We're famous because the big star of Rockin' Armpits, Victor Waggle, won't go on stage until he's had one of our burritos. It's a ritual for him. He shows up around 10 o'clock. The security people bring him around to the back side of the truck so he doesn't get mobbed.
Darren turned the hose off.
I guess you came to take me back to jail.
Yes, you missed your court date.
It's hard to keep track of things like that. Problem is, this isn't a good time for me. I'd appreciate it if you could come back in a couple days. I already bought the tortillas for tonight, and I'm in eggs, up to my ears. And I don't know what'll happen if Victor doesn't get his burrito.
If we go now, court is in session, and I can get you rebonded and back home for dinner.
I guess that would be okay.
I loaded Darren into the back seat of the rangeman SUV and called Connie. We have to get him bonded out today, I said. He has to be working on his food truck tonight. How good is this, I thought. I know exactly where Victor Waggle will be at 10 o'clock. I can have everyone in place to make a capture with the minimum amount of fuss. We'll get Waggle in cuffs, and hopefully he'll know where the kidnap victims are being held. It was late afternoon when we went before the judge and the paperwork was completed. Lula returned to the office with Connie, and Carl and I took Darren home.
This turned out to be a real relaxing day, Darren said. It's not often I get to sit around and do nothing. I'm usually collecting eggs or feeding chickens or selling eggs or feeding eggs or selling chickens or...
I was sitting in the front next to Carl, and I checked Darren out in the rearview mirror. Are you okay back there? I asked.
I'm freaking fine, Darren said. Why wouldn't I be fine? I'm in this nice car, and you even have bottled water and cookies back here for me. And by the way, these cookies taste a little funny, but I like them anyway. They're freaking fine.
I swiveled around and looked at him. Cookies?
Yep, the ones in the tin. I ate them all. I hope that was okay.
Oh my God, I said to Carl. He ate the hashy smashies.
I don't know from personal experience, Carl said, but I hear the edibles stay with you for a longer time than just smoking weed, and they aren't always well tolerated.
I feel a little sick, Darren said.
I squelched a grimace and told Carl to drive faster.
Maybe I'm just hungry, Darren said. Are there any more cookies?
No. We had to detour around the snake pit. A flatbed was offloading two giant spotlights. Vendors were finding their assigned spots on the street. Several black Escalades were lined up on the far end of the block. Carl blew past the junkyard, turned into Darren's driveway, and skidded to a stop. I ran around and got Darren out of the car. He took two steps and projectile vomited half-digested hashy smashies. Do you think he'll be okay now? I asked Carl. Carl shrugged.